Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Friday, December 11, 2015. The leader of the SPLM in opposition says Juba should trust the rebels' advance team.
The government is not paying for the transport of advance teams at all. So their objection on security grounds is baseless. After all, they are not armed.
And the Red Cross warns of looming humanitarian crisis in South Sudan.
These people are not feeling safe enough to return to their area of origin, to their home. They are grouped in small groups in those hard-to-reach areas, and they actually fled for their life and for their physical integrity.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The leader of the SPLM in opposition says he is disappointed with the actions of the Kiir administration. Riek Machar says the implementation of the peace agreement depends on the presence of his advance team in Juba. Machar says Juba has no valid reasons to block the coming of the rebels' advance team to Juba. He says the international community must put pressure on Juba to implement the peace agreement.
We are responding again to the government to allow our advance team to go. We have 7 points which we think we would work together with the government. One, the speedy dissemination of the peace among various communities in the country is one objective. The other objective is to ensure that the reconciliation process is kicked off very speedily by our advanced team. The third is that we want the process of confidence building among our membership and the government party to be also tackled. Fourth, we want to encourage the IDPs that are in the UN camps to want to encourage to go to back to their houses and villages.
The government in Juba is saying that your number is too big, and they are saying if you can reduce them, they will appreciate. You are saying you want to send this big number because they are supposed to do the things that you are listing. Now, this is going to take a long time before the two of you agree on the number of the advance team. In the meantime, if there's going to be no progress, what is plan B?
The government is not paying for the transport of our advance team. Second, the government is not paying for the accommodation in Juba. Third, the government is not paying for the transport of the state advance teams. It costs them nothing at all. So their objection on security grounds is baseless. After all, they are not armed. Most of them are political activists, members of parliament, either the national, legislative, or the council of state. We see no reason why they should create a fuss out of it.
This number you're talking about is 600 plus. How are you taking care of these people in Pagak?
I tell you, it's very difficult, huh? We are more than that because we had a conference, a peace implementation conference, and the people are waiting. Some will go back to where they came from, but the advance team is stuck with me here. Feeding them is not an easy task.
South Sudanese people at this moment, with all the economic hardship in Juba and all over the country, are really waiting to hear a definite answer from the leadership of the country about when will this peace agreement be implemented. If you're given an opportunity to assure them, what would you tell them?
The implementation of the peace agreement starts with the advance team. Once our advance team arrives Juba, and in actual fact they join the JMAC, which is the Joint Monitoring and Evaluation Commission our members will be in that advanced team. Our members also in the CTSAM, that is Ceasefire Transitional Security Monitoring Mechanism, our three members will be there. And then the JMCC, the Joint Military Ceasefire Commission, our members will also be in that team. And then the National Constitutional Amendment Committee, our members are also in that. So the institutions for implementation of the peace agreement, the members will be in the advanced team. So the process of implementing the peace agreement will be kicked off very speedily with the arrival of our advanced team.
That's Rebel leader Riek Machar speaking with me via a satellite phone from the rebels' headquarters in Pagak, Upper Nile State, earlier today. Yesterday, we reported the South Sudan government said the SPLM in opposition advance team due to arrive in Juba today will not be coming this week. The team was delayed because the government and armed opposition could not agree on how many SPLM in opposition members should be part of the team. One South Sudanese political analyst says the delay is only creating more tension and will slow the implementation of the peace agreement. VOA fellow Justin Tito has more.
The SPLM-IO was planning to send some 600 men to Juba as its advance team, but government spokesman Michael McQuay said that was too many, that the government was not ready to receive such a huge number due in part to security considerations. And he said the SPLM-IO did not provide details of each team member. But James Okuk, head of the Political Science Department at University of Juba, describes those issues as pity.
The government thinks that, they will be spending money on the advance team, and they look at it as a reward to their coming back and being received as heroes of peace. So some element in the government, especially those who don't really like the peace agreement, they feel uncomfortable about that.
Okuk argues a big delegation is necessary to show confidence that warring parties are serious about restoring peace in the country.
And as long as many of the SPLM-IO come back home, it tells you there are no many remaining in the bush to fight the war. So that will give you a hope that a peace agreement has come.
Okuk also blames the SPLM-IO advance team's delayed arrival on the Intergovernmental Authority on Development, or IGAD, which brokered the peace deal.
They should not just ride in Addis Ababa. They should have come and operated in Juba here and facilitate the coming of the advance team. And they would have eased all these quarrels about the names and the volume of the list and whatever.
Okuk says the South Sudanese people have high expectation that peace will finally take place. He urged both the government and the armed opposition to not let down the people of South Sudan who have suffered so much.
The agreement will remain as ink on the paper. And any agreement which is just ink on the paper is as useless as no agreement. So this is the effect, and it will create, depression.
The government says it will announce a new date for the arrival of SPLM-IO advance team when the number of members has been worked out. For VOA News, I am Tiro Justin in Washington.
Mungume Devs Rakarinj prepared this report from Juba. After 2 years of war, the International Committee of the Red Cross warns hundreds of thousands of people in South Sudan are facing severe food shortages, with many at the point of starvation. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from ICRC headquarters in Geneva.
The International Committee of the Red Cross warns the level of hunger in South Sudan is alarmingly high, and many people are in desperate need of medical care. The Swiss humanitarian organization says for many people, the last 2 years have been a life on the run in search of food and health care and away from the dangers of warfare and sexual assault. Florence Gillette, ICRC Operations Coordinator for South Sudan, has just returned from a mission to that country. She tells VOA the ongoing fighting between the government and rebel forces has displaced more than 1.7 million South Sudanese in remote areas. She says many are effectively in hiding.
Hiding in the bush, on islands, sometimes on makeshift islands, that they have made to stay out of reach of any attacks. These people are not feeling safe enough to return to their area of origin, to their home. They are grouped in small groups in those hard-to-reach area, and they actually fled for their life and for their physical integrity.
Gillette says the ICRC and other aid groups can occasionally provide these displaced people with food, but she says not enough is reaching them, and many are barely surviving on what they can gather in the forests and the fields. As a consequence, she says, malnutrition levels are extremely high in many areas. She says providing medical care is practically impossible in some places. She notes there are many war wounded, and right now people are particularly at risk of malaria and respiratory infections.
It's difficult to say how many people are dying of those diseases because we can only work in some pockets because we don't have the means to cover the whole areas.
The warring parties signed a peace agreement earlier this year. Unfortunately, the ICRC says violence persists and the humanitarian consequences of 2 years of conflict remain of great concern. Besides the massive food needs, the agency says many people are separated from their loved ones with little hope of returning to the homes they have fled. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, U.S. lawmakers accuse South Sudanese leaders of harassing aid workers and widespread corruption. More on that after this break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today.
Do you think most people are trustworthy?
I really do not know. I really can't tell. But I am a trustworthy person.
No, because human beings change, and anyone can be tempted to do anything, maybe out of frustration.
I don't think that most of the people are trustworthy because, you know, some people, they wave from position to position due to threat or sometimes due to circumstances that come across them.
On a scale of 1 to 10, I would say I'll give a 6. So let's say above half, about 50% are trustworthy.
Some people are trustworthy and some are not, because you can put your trust in someone, while maybe they would think negatively about you, while other people would think positively about you.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus. As South Sudanese continue to wait for the leaders of the two warring parties to start implementing the AGAS peace agreement, a local think tank says service delivery must be the top priority of a transitional government of national unity. A senior analyst at the Third Institute says government must particularly focus on health sector. Mungume Devs Rakarinj has more for VOA from Juba.
Speaking yesterday at a Third Institute lecture, Third Institute analyst Augustino Tingimayai said, since the signing of the Comprehensive Peace Agreement in 2005, authorities in Juba have done little to provide basic services to the South Sudanese people. He says the government has allocated only 4% of its annual budget for health, most of which goes to pay salaries. Now that the government and the rebels have signed a peace deal, Ting says the transitional government should provide adequate funding to the health sector and ensure that the funding is transparent.
The expectation is that this new agreement will come with reforms. And those reforms will include restructuring health and monitoring health spending in the public arena.
Ting says due to the chronic, insufficient funding of health care, the government does not train enough health care professionals to provide services to its citizens. The World Health Organization requires a minimum standard of 20 doctors to serve a population of 100,000. According to the health ministry, South Sudan has only 500 doctors nationwide, serving a population of more than 12 million. And of those doctors, many leave their jobs, preferring instead to work for NGOs and other better-paying agencies. Maya says government corruption is also a big problem in funding healthcare.
At this point, the question is no longer about how much money is spent on health or education. The question is to what extent those funds are used. Because you could have billions of dollars on health, but if there is no system that is delivering exactly on those services, the money disappears and you basically have nothing to show for.
Professor Peter Adok of South Sudan's Upper Nile University agrees. He adds that one indicator of the failure in South Sudan's health sector is the country's high infant mortality rate, which is one of the highest in the world.
Corruption is a disease that kills before other diseases. Because if the money you allocate for health does not reach where it is intended to be, then this can explain why the child mortality is increasing.
Health Ministry Advisor Tong Ding says the government is trying to improve the health sector.
All we need is to train them. Is that put the highest, we have to consider the high level of training, that is the university, and then also you have to have the mid-level cadres that are trained at the lower level with a diploma. Those are the clinical officers, the midwives, the nurses, the lab technicians. These people are key in health service delivery.
Deng says the health ministry has sent some South Sudanese to train in neighboring countries. Businesswoman Natalina Makwet says the government should provide more than lip service when it comes to delivering health services.
If somebody would have started working on this, we would have had like a very experienced working force in South Sudan. So I really want you to take that back. Don't just talk about how you guys are working very hard. We really need you people to work hard.
One of the biggest problems in South Sudan's healthcare system is lack of access for people who live outside the capital. The government says that 9% of South Sudan's qualified healthcare workers are concentrated in Juba. For VOA News, Ayamugume, Davis Ruakarinj in Juba.
A member of the United States Senate told South Sudanese diplomats they should be embarrassed to represent their government at a hearing yesterday, while another senator said the country's leaders should be investigated for perpetrating genocide. At the same hearing, the USAID Deputy Assistant Administrator and others confirmed the government and rebels had harassed aid workers. Ayen Bior has more from Washington.
Princeton Lyman, former special envoy to Sudan and South Sudan, said both warring parties were guilty of harassing aid workers, and even worse.
I find it shocking that the government of South Sudan has for a long time spoken against UNMISS, denigrated its work, and we know that the patrols going out, brave patrols going out, are being shot at by various entities.
Lyman also says the U.S. and the United Nations are set to renew the UNMISS mandate later this month, and during that process, Lyman says the U.N. should make clear that attacks on U.N. peacekeepers is a war crime, and those responsible will be held accountable.
I would like to see that same legal precedent for attacks on aid workers. 41 aid workers have been killed in South Sudan. That, too, requires accountability.
War crimes pay is the message that the director of the Washington-based Enough Project brought to the committee. John Prendergast says too many of South Sudan's leaders are corrupt and they never seriously invest in building credible state institutions.
South Sudanese officials who loot state coffers, and that includes the rebels who used to be part of the South Sudan government and the current government, should be under no illusion that they can park their ill-gotten gains in the United States or use the U.S. financial system to execute their heists.
Prendergast would also like to use anti-money laundering mechanisms within the U.S. Department of Justice to help fight corruption in South Sudan. And he says he would like to see FinCEN, or the Financial Crimes Enforcement Network, issue an advisory to all U.S. financial institutions regarding the risk of money laundering activity in South Sudan.
And we can require domestic financial institutions and agencies to implement specific special measures against designated primary money laundering concerns like that which is going on in South Sudan. You would be shocked at how much money these leaders are making off of money laundering today in South Sudan.
Lyman advised senators that South Sudan's peace agreement will only succeed if the African Union and its members are prepared to enforce it. He pointed to the Joint Monitoring and Evaluation Committee, headed by former Botswana President Festus Magai, Lyman says the AU should give Magai more authority so he can effect real change in South Sudan.
He should have the powers to call the parties to order, to veto appointments that make no sense, make appointments of his own, take control over the budgetary and economic aspects of the government, and recommend to IGAD and to Africa Union and Security Council further sanctions if the parties don't carry these things forward.
Lyman reiterated his belief that President Kiir and rebel leader Riek Machar are not committed to the peace agreement. He says the United States should prepare for a plan B for a worst-case scenario.
If this fails, I think the only way then thereafter is to raise this problem to a much higher level. An arms embargo, a trade embargo on anything except food and medicine. Let's starve the fighting, not the people.
Lyman also urged for a joint AU-UN mediator to be instituted if matters get worse and progress is not made in South Sudan. He believes the joint mediator would be in a better position to build a comprehensive plan to move the country forward. For VOA News, I'm Ayan Bior in Washington.
South Sudan's ruling SPLM party has called off its convention, which was supposed to get underway in Juba tomorrow. A party spokesman says the meeting has been rescheduled to the second week of January. Bol Makwang says party members will discuss a new constitution and other important party documents. But at least one analyst says he does not see the point of holding a convention now when the focus should be on implementing the peace deal. Waki Simon Wudu has this report for VOA from Juba.
The documents SPLM officials plan to discuss were already passed in a controversial National Liberation Council meeting held in Juba 2 years ago, something many people say sparked the violence in December 2013. SPLM spokesman Bol Makwang told the reporters at a news conference at the SPLM secretariat in Juba today the extraordinary convention is being postponed for what he described as technical challenges.
We have made adequate preparations and will be dispatching the letters for invitation to the members of the convention and also to the friends and also observers.
Makwang says the convention will be held at Nyakuron Cultural Center in Juba, the same place the ruling party held its council meeting in 2013, shortly before the fighting erupted. James Okuk, head of the Political Science Department at Juba University, calls it a bad idea.
It is recycling the same thing which led to this war, you know, the same issues, in the same place, even this, the same Nyakuren. It has a very bad memory, and then they want to regenerate the memory again. Why? This is unacceptable.
At that meeting in late 2013, top SPLM members disagreed over issues in party documents touching an empty conflict that quickly spread across the country. Makwang insists everything will be fine this time around.
We are going to pass our constitutional manifesto. We would like to assure the people of South Sudan that what happened in 2013 is not going to happen again. And actually, we apologize that it happened in the name of the SPLM by those who did it.
Makwang says he expects members of the SPLM-IO, led by former Vice President Riek Machar, to participate in the January Extraordinary Convention. Okuk says holding a party convention now is wrong-headed.
Right now, the priority is the implementation of peace agreement. The priority is not who should be the leader of SPLM or what type of constitution the SPLM should be.
Okuk says the SPLM should wait for the re-establishment of the Political Parties Council as proposed in the peace agreement, which would handle the reorganization of all political parties. Okuk says right now the ruling party should focus on healing, reconciling and building trust among communities torn apart by the conflict. For VOA News, I am Wake Simon Wudu in Juba.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Here is a recap of today's top stories with South Sudan in Focus editor Carol Van Damme.
Thanks, John. The leader of the SPLM in opposition says he is disappointed with the actions of the Kiir administration. Riek Machar tells VOA's South Sudan in Focus that the implementation of the peace agreement depends on the presence of his advance team in the capital. Bashar says the government has no legitimate reason to block the arrival of the rebels' advance team to Juba. He called on the international community to put pressure on Juba to implement the peace agreement. The advance team was supposed to arrive today but was delayed because the government and armed opposition still disagree on how many SPLM-IO members should be part of that team. One South Sudanese political analyst says the delay is only creating more tension and will slow down implementation of the peace agreement. The SPLM-IO wants to send about 600 men to Juba as its advance team, but government spokesman Michael McQuay says that is far too many since the government is not ready to receive such a huge number, he says, due in part to security concerns. The government says about 30 men should be enough for the advance team. But James Akok, head of the political science department at Juba University, describes those issues as petty. He says the government thinks it will be spending money on the advance team, and they look at it as a reward to returning to Juba as heroes. He says some in the government are not comfortable with that notion. Finally, after 2 years of war, the International Committee of the Red Cross warns that hundreds of thousands of South Sudanese people face severe food shortages, with many nearly starving to death. The ICRC also warns many people are in desperate need of medical care. The Swiss humanitarian organization says for many people, the last 2 years have been a life on the run in search of food and health care and away from the dangers of warfare and sexual assault. Florence Gillette, ICRC operations coordinator for South Sudan, who just returned from a mission to that country, says the ongoing fighting between the government and rebel forces has displaced more than 1.7 million South Sudanese people in remote areas. She says many are effectively in hiding. And that's a look at some of today's top stories. I'm Carol Van Dam.
That's our show for this Friday. We now leave you with the song Kulium Dushoman by Emmanuel Kembe. We have been listening to Emmanuel Kembe with the song Dushoman Kulium. I am John Tanza in Washington. You have a peaceful weekend and join us again next week for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.